Support for The Dirtbag comes from cable listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Alrighty, we never get to that part. It's alarming how charming it is to be a farming.
Boy, I would love to see some people feel that way and come out to Northwoods Nursery and help us grow stuff.
Well, speaking of helping grow stuff here, I've got some announcements to make here. But anyway, we just assume everybody knows who we are.
That's right. Good morning.
Glenn Andreessen here beside you until 12 noon, and Jim Gilbert is right there.
Beside you as well.
Yes, indeed. He will be also here until 12 noon. This is The Dirt Bag, a garden variety show.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, when you said that thing about nobody knows who we are, it reminded me of that funny line in that song, "Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name?"
Yes, yeah.
I love that.
That's The Doors.
Yep.
Ba-da-ba-ba. Well, here we are on the second Wednesday of the month. We come to you every month on the second Wednesday at 11 o'clock. We've got a full show today. Our plant of the month is cherries, and Jim and I are going to try to bungle our way through a discussion on cherries. But Jim has some good information from Lorraine, his partner. Also, boy, we've got the first fruits coming on here now, which is nice. The vegetables have been harvesting for a while now. But with fruits and vegetables come pests, and we will tackle some of those. Also, we'll also talk about rock or glacial dust. And there's some interesting things I read online. What's happening on our farms and gardens, or the farm and my garden. Jim, for one, we'll talk about pollinating pineapple guava.
Which I'm sure every listener must have at least one of those plants in their yard.
Yep. And after listening to you, they may want one.
I hope
or
so.
Want another one. And then we'll get back to the aphid control and other pest controls. And a nice little something to think about when you're listening to that. And I'm going to... I'll just tell you right now, then you can be thinking, is this guy full of it or is it kind of true? And this is something that I heard years ago from a talk at the Yard, Garden, and Patio show. And I can't even remember who the presenter was, but I adopted it and I've even made a little slideshow out of it in that, is this true? This adage that the more legs something has, the less likely it is to be a pest. So just think about that one as we start talking about our control measures. Our Dirtbag Dictionary term is stippling. What the heck is that? And then we'll have a documentary update, although Jim says it hasn't been shown much in the last few weeks.
But we're working on a cool project, we'll tell you.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. And I'm renaming what's annoying me this month. and now it's going to be what I'm trying to understand. Mm-hmm. And this has puzzled me for a while. And then I heard it again on one of the news, NPR news segments on over the weekend. They had some, I don't know that he was an expert, but he was certainly a advocate and was advocating for it. And that is the driving technique, if you will, known as zippering, which is when if you're coming, like there's a traffic, there's a lane closure ahead, and so you have to merge together. And he was claiming, or he was stating that zippering is a much more efficient way to move cars, you know, down from two lanes down to one or three down to one. And that's experts say, yeah, you can get 40% more cars through there. And what I'm trying to understand is when you zipper, and you know what I'm talking about here, Jim, mm-hmm, where yeah. you let one car go, one car go, one car go.
Yeah.
You're not doing that at full speed. You have to slow down to let cars in, right?
So, well, you know, a lot of cars don't go at the same speed.
At the end, when you get to the, when there's only room for one lane of traffic. Right. So my thought is, and then I'll get to your thought, okay. Jim, is that, well, what if you zippered way early where you're going 40 miles an hour like you do on an on-ramp? Rather than wait until the very end when you have to, everybody has to slow down. So that's my thought. I've never questioned any expert on that. That's what I'm trying to understand here, Jim. Now help me understand.
Okay, so that's funny, Glenn. But I know we're supposed to talk about plants, but zippering is interesting
too. That's
right. But just for one second, so we zipper on the way home through Oregon City,
yeah.
and up on the hill, up on the top of the hill, and maybe a listener or two knows this point where it goes from two lanes to one. But there's a traffic light, so people get. Sometimes the left lane gets really backed up at that traffic light, and there aren't very many cars in the right lane. And when the traffic light turns green, everybody starts going. But not all cars in that group go at the same speed. They're all not bumper to bumper. There's always spaces mm-hmm. between them. And, you know, so we often are in the right lane, and we just fill into one of those spaces, and it works pretty smoothly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know.
That's a little different situation than I'm thinking of here, but I understand your point there. So that's helping me understand. Thank you, Jim.
Sure. okay.
All right.
Maybe for the buttoning could be next time.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Button up here. Okay, well, back to the... this is a garden variety show, remember. okay, Jim, you probably haven't come prepared because you forget this every month, but what was your most used tool in the last 30 days? Well, actually, this was 35 days.
Well, you know what? Probably the most used one was my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I've been potting plants. I've been potting like crazy.
Yeah, okay.
From 1 gallon to 5 gallon plants, and every one of those 1 gallons is root bound and needs to be massaged and beat up and the roots loosen and everything. And then after I do all of that work, I cut the roots mm-hmm. back a little bit. But so my pruner is the second thing, but the first thing in my hands.
Yeah, well, that's good. That just lets us kind of know what you've been doing.
Yeah.
I think mine has been maybe my post hole digger for when I transplant into my garden beds peppers and tomatoes. That's what I've done most recently. Just rather than dig the hole by hand. Post hole digger is great because all I'm doing is disturbing the soil right where I'm going to plant it. Plus, I throw in a little fertilizer and eggshells for some long-term calcium. And
how many eggs do you eat?
Well, I not that many, and these are still left over from my food booth. But we don't do that anymore. As you, the Swedish pancakes.
Really, you saved them from the food booth? That's very cool.
I do that every year. Yeah, I mean, we'd go through more than 1,000 eggs. So that's a lot of eggshells.
That's a lot of eggshells.
Well, you have to do something with them.
That's right. That's great, Glenn. I don't eat very many eggs either, so it's that goes into our compost, but not like you're doing it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be in the same boat when I run out of those. So.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd get about a 5 gallon bucket of crushed eggshells every year.
I'll just store them.
In a 5 gallon bucket.
For just like they didn't get rotten or
something? Well, when we are during the preparation period and we crack the eggs, then we take them out. We have a baseball bat or something to crush them up in the bucket. Mm-hmm. And then we take them out and put them in another 5-gallon bucket where there's a hose. And I have a hole at the bottom of the bucket. And so I would rinse them off repeatedly.
Got it.
Yeah, because they would get kind of smelly.
I would think.
But they crush very well when they're clean, uh-huh. so to speak.
Nice.
Yeah, there hasn't been an issue with them.
Well, I'm sure some listeners probably, you know, think, wow, what am I going to do with my 1,000 eggshells? You
know? Well, and then I'd bring them home down from Junction City where the Scandinavian Festival is and where I was. And then I would lay them out on a sheet of plastic in the sun for several days. Mm-hmm. And then I would actually do what, Jim? Walk on eggshells.
No, what an amazing, amazing thing to do. I'm sure you have a video of that, right?
After they were dried, you know, pretty much, then I'd go out there and do the hoochie-coo on them.
Amazing.
Yeah. Then put them back into the 5-gallon bucket, but crushed.
Yes, crushed and sterilized, more or less. Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So.
Good advice.
There we are there. Now, if you have any gardening questions, now that we're ready to hit the garden a little bit more, please feel free to give us a call, 503-231-8187. We do appreciate those people who have called that number and asked questions and also went to the KBOO website and became a member or renewed their membership in this fine radio station.
Yeah. Well, I don't know for sure, but I think we are probably the only radio gardening show, certainly in the Portland area and maybe mm-hmm, in the mm-hmm, Northwest. Mm-hmm, I mean, it's, mm-hmm. We'd love to have your support.
That's right.
And, you know, talk going about calling in, too. If you have a challenge in your garden, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what, you know, kind of things that you find difficult or challenging and would like us to talk about. That would be interesting for us to hear.
Indeed. So. I will pass along, before we get to our plant of the month, cherries, a rather interesting email that I got. It was a month ago. It came actually at 3 o'clock on May 8th, which was our last dirt bag, so they just missed it by whatnot. But this is a person here, Kristen is her name, and wrote and said that she's the chair of the Green Committee at Meals on Wheels in Portland. Meals on Wheels People, I guess it's called now. And she says, I have a bit of a weird request. I'll just read this here. We have one central kitchen and 19 senior dining sites throughout Multnomah, Washington, and Clark counties, and each has its own system for handling food waste. The centers that are most satisfied with their systems are ones that donate leftover milk, food waste, scraps to local farmers. For example, we have a pig farmer in Vancouver who comes and picks up our food waste every week. The pig farmer told our site manager there, that must have been the one in Vancouver, that I, Glenn, is the expert and connector of all farmers in our community. Now, that's not true, but he did say he's a big fan of the KBOO program. So, anyway, here's what Kristen would like. We want to get the word out that each of our sites would love a farmer to save food for and give away. But we don't know how to connect our meal sites with composters, gardeners, and farmers. Some of our sites do compost and grow their own vegetables to use in their kitchens, but some don't have space or the resources to do so. So, if you, one of our dear, or many of our dear listeners, would have a use for all that food for pigs or composting, you can. She didn't give her particular. Well, actually, I do have her email address here. Would that be fair to give that out, Jim? She didn't say to contact her. So what I'm suggesting is you go to the Meals on Wheels People website, which is MOWP.org. That's Meals on Wheels People. MOWP.org.
And I wonder if the people could write to send us an email, our address,
yes.
KBOO address, and we could forward that on to
We could do that
to
too
as well.
That's that. Yeah. What's our email address? TheDirtBag@KBOO.org.
Cool.
So you can do that there, too. This reminds me, years ago, 20 years ago, I used to get from a bakery supply store ripped or somehow damaged bags of sugar that I would use to make syrup. You know, all beekeepers will feed their bees if they're starving during the winter and something like that. But I think I was paying 5 cents a pound or something like that. But he told me and that they had stacks and bags of stuff that a pig farmer would come in. And I think he was paying 2 cents a pound for just whatever, flour and just whatever they had. But that was great for his pigs. So
funny how things remind you of things. So that reminded me of the term dumpster diving, which I took part in back in the 60s.
Yeah.
But I found out that stuff I was getting out of the dumpster wasn't stuff I really should be eating.
But you turned out fine anyway.
Somehow or another, survived.
That's right. Okay, so let's get on now to the program at hand here. No, let's take our first musical break here first, and then we'll have a clean break. Ty, are you ready to roll on those? Okay, Ty's ready. Wait, I'll set this up here. What do we have coming up here in the next 2 weeks? Ooh, the summer solstice, which means that we are at the peak light time right now. So all of these tunes have to do with light, believe it or not. And the first one is not from CCR, which is Creedence Clearwater Revival, but it's one of John Fogerty's songs. And in fact, this is John Fogerty. He put out an album called Wrote a Song for Everyone. And he takes some of his well-known pieces from his time at Creedence Clearwater. And then he teams up with just famous other people. The only one that comes to my mind, other than the one that I have here, is Bob Seger. Had a nice little duet with him. But anyway, this is John Fogerty with My Morning Jacket, Long As I Can See the Light. Yeah, we finally heard from John Fogerty there.
It's a pity we don't have like 2 hours for the show, Glenn, because you're a great DJ.
We could fill it.
That we could, absolutely.
Do we want to?
I'm going to go back and pot plants.
That's right. Okay, Jim, you start off our discussion here on cherries, our plant of the month.
Yeah, well, cherries are interesting. And we at Northwoods just recently started a more intense selection and breeding program with cherries led by my partner, Lorraine Gardner. And she's done a lot of research. I'm really impressed with the research she did. You know, we all think of cherries, you know, you go buy some cherries in a store, or you grow them on a sweet cherry tree in your yard. And if you're lucky enough to succeed with all of that, you know, they're nice and fun to eat. But boy, the cherry world is much bigger than that. And we discovered, among other things, that Italy, which has a climate that cherry changes quite a bit from north to south or south to north, has a lot of really cool, what I always called pie cherries. And some people might call them tart cherries. But in some cases, the tart cherries aren't tart. They're flavorful. They're good to eat out of hand. And they're different. I mean, they're really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we've planted. There's a couple of varieties we've had for a while that we're giving more attention to, and we're looking for more, and also doing hybridization of some of those to see what we can get.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of fun. But, you know, generally speaking, cherries are not the easiest. Well, they're not too hard to grow, but they're hard to harvest because there are other creatures that like to eat them before we do. And one of the things that's been driving Lorraine nuts lately is birds, of course,
mm-hmm.
because the birds, at least the ones that live in our area, will come and eat them when they're still green. I mean, they're so hungry, apparently, for cherries that they don't even wait till they start coloring up. I mean, or at least hardly starting to color, and they'll eat them. And we're now good customers of bird netting companies.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't be surprised if other listeners have trouble with birds on their cherries too.
My problem is squirrels.
Mm.
Yeah, I won't get any cherries this year. I'm going to have to net again.
Really?
Yeah, next year. I practice the Spanish bush method pruning for cherries, and that'll work pretty well.
You told me once a long time ago about you just cut them back.
Yeah.
That's the Spanish bush
method. Yeah.
But that probably inhibits the next year's crop, right?
Well, I presume it does, yes.
And then you get a crop the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that on a couple of trees. Then, unfortunately, I stopped. I only did it once, so now they're back to their normal 30 foot.
Yeah, you kind of have to keep it up. But, boy, with a battery chainsaw, it'll be a lot easier.
Yeah. Cool.
So, anyway, back to your...
Yeah. So bird netting, we're now doing... If you have a big tree and you want to protect the cherries on branches... Then it's probably much simpler just to put netting around the branch itself.
Yeah.
If the tree is small, you can put bird netting over the whole thing. And Lorraine has discovered that the fine mesh bird netting, which also can be used, is also insect repellent too, is a lot easier to put over a tree than the kind that has a larger opening because those get caught in the branches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're doing that on you know, a small scale when we have something we've done some crossing of different cherries and we don't want the darn birds to eat them, you know.
Right. Nor maybe to pollinate. The crossing is already done, so you don't care about that.
Yeah, we're doing the crossing by hand, and then we actually will, of course, bag separately with paper bags. Usually, bag the flowers that we're using for crossing, but. Once the fruit is setting, we're trying to keep the whole tree from being devoured.
Well, are these crosses between sweet and pie cherries or tart cherries?
That's what we're doing, yep.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting, when I was talking about the Italy experience, is that when you go from south to north, so south, Prunus avium, which is the sweet cherry, is predominant. And up in the northern part of Italy is Prunus cerasus, or the pie cherry. As one moves north and the other moves south, they naturally cross.
Sure.
And there are some pretty cool varieties that have come from those crosses. And Bianco di Rosata is one of them, Rosata. And It's a very tasty cherry. It's not too big, but great for eating out of hand, and you know, very flavorful, and also in this research, you know, we learn more about the Midwest cherry production, which happens like in Michigan, where they grow Montmorency. Montmorency is a traditional pie cherry. It probably makes an okay pie, a good pie, but it really doesn't have much else going for it. And the pie cherry, the Montmorency growers are struggling a little bit because people are kind of looking for something more than that, and that's all they've got. So, so anyway, there was a cherry researcher named Amy Iazzoni who worked for years back in Michigan working with this. But unfortunately, the growers really didn't take it on. They didn't support her work like they should have. And it's too bad.
Yeah.
But we're, of course, focused on homeowners, so we're not looking at commercial growers.
Right. And you know, as far as, like you say, it's, you know, it's easy enough to grow a cherry, but there's no real true dwarf cherries, so you really have to prune that, and may not be appropriate for small lot gardens.
A pie cherry, the Prunus cerasus is a naturally smaller tree,
right?
Which is nice too.
Yeah,
so you can get away with growing. I mean, you know, they all cherries need to get pruned, but I would say that you could probably plant one of the cerasus varieties and not have to prune it so much.
I recall harvesting some pie cherries at night or at dusk and eating quite a few too. And then the next morning when it was time to process them and whatnot, we noticed that there's a little tiny hole in almost each cherry, you know, which was a hole and then, meaning that there was a larva then in each cherry, you know, from some kind of a fly.
Yeah,
the larva was inside the maggot.
That's another benefit of using the finer mesh netting,
right,
to cover the branches. You know.
That's what I'm going to do with for apples rather than my apple. I have some smaller, rounder apple trees that rather than bagging the apples, I'm going to bag the tree, which I've done before. I just haven't done it yet, but. I have to get that on soon because the apple fly and the apple maggot and the codling moth are doing their duty. So, yeah. And another thing that Jim and I have no major recall on this, but there's different levels of pollinating that certain cherry trees won't pollinate other certain cherry trees if they fall outside of their level or something like that, even if they're blooming at the same time. So you'll have to just want to check that or talk to your nursery person.
And a very nice sweet cherry self-fertile variety is Lapins, which we've grown for many, many, many years. And the cerasus are typically self-fertile.
Right. So keep that in mind too for what you...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you have any gardening questions, once again, we remind you, 503-231-8187. Keep that in mind, too, because it's now time for, Ty, are you ready? For our garden stumper. Here it comes. Don't know why. Don't know how. Don't know who. Don't know what.
But it's going to be a stumper.
That's right. It's going to be an easy one, too. Cool. Ty, you getting there? There we are. Stumper today is an easy one. No, it's a short one. And that is, what is honeydew? And we're not talking about the melon here, but what is honeydew? And if we get an answer quickly, I won't need to give any hints, but I do have hints to give later on. 503-231-8187. And remember that the winner who calls with the first correct answer will get a garden hand tool sharpened free of charge, if you so choose, from Coley Farm Store at the corner of Northeast Alberta Street and 42nd Avenue. Pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, hose, a hand tool.
Fingernails?
I don't know that you'd want to, with his equipment, I don't think he'd want to be. Boy, that's quite an emery board you have there, Ted. Okay, so let us, we talked about the first fruits. Let's just get right into the pests that we're talking about here. Okay?
Okay.
You go first, Jim.
Aphids. I have a special project going on in a what we call the rain house, which is a covered space that in which we're growing some apricots, and the apricots seem to be a magnet for aphids.
Oh yeah.
And I was doing pruning in there, and you know, getting covered with aphid goo, and. Thought about that. So we were hoping to use ladybugs for the aphids. Ladybugs are a little temperamental at times. They sometimes don't stick around when you want them to. And if the things get really bad before you can let them go, it may be more than they can deal with. So we sprayed. And what we used is a horticultural oil spray, which with the summer rate, which is not going to hurt the plant. If you use the dormant oil spray, is too strong. You don't want to do that. But the on the label, it tells you the dilution to use, and it is pretty effective.
Uh huh. Yeah. You have to coat the insect.
Yeah, the insect needs to be in contact mm-hmm, with mm-hmm, it. So when you mm-hmm. spray it with that, but it's a non-toxic spray
Right. It's formulated that so it won't hurt the leaves and whatnot.
Right.
Let's go to the phones here, Jim. We've got plenty of calls here, I think, for our garden stumper.
Okay.
Okay, who's up? Who's next? It's just no name. Okay. But you're on the air.
Okay, let me hear. Okay. So the honeydew is that the aphids leaf on the leaves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're kind of cutting out on us, kind of in and out on us, but that is exactly correct.
Oh. And that's what I made a point not to use that term.
Yes, I saw how you definitely did that there.
Aphid goo.
Yeah. Yes. So if you would you stay on the line, and Ty will take you back, and you can give your email address and phone number to Ty, and I'll pass that on to Coley Farm Store, and you're entitled to a free garden tool sharpening. So thanks for calling in. Okay, yes, honeydew. We'll just give a little bit more information on that, and that Jim was talking about, and they have to go through a lot of, they have sucking mouth parts. And kind of like straws, if you will. And so they'll puncture the cell walls in plants, and they will suck out the sap, if you will, the juices that are in there. But they suck out way more. They have to suck out a lot to get the nutrients that they want. And so the honeydew is just kind of passes through them. It's their excrement in maybe every sense. But it's sugary, and so it's sticky, and ants like it. There is such a thing as honeydew honey, because bees will collect that and will process it into honey. I mean, I think it's edible. I don't know that I've ever had it, but I know that some cultures harvest it, or some areas do, just because that's available and they make it. The honeybees do, but it can create quite a mess when it's dropping on your car or in your hands or whatever. I'm sure people have experienced the walking underneath, say, a tulip tree or a linden tree, which are prone to aphid infestations, and your feet, you know, it's sticky when you walk. It's stick that's all honeydew. But it washes away with rain pretty easily. But so horticultural oil is a great solution for that. The in the garden, I like it when aphids kind of show up because I know that that ladybugs or other predatory insects such as lacewings and predatory moths or wasps. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like to see that going on in the garden. So,
as long as it's not too much in the way of aphids.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, my on my cherry trees, you know, it'll just curl some leaves because mm-hmm. there's thousands of them. But it's not the whole thing. And soon the ladybugs show up just on their own. Did you purchase ladybugs to release in your garden?
We did.
In the rain house?
We did. A little challenging because the ladybugs, the suppliers, well, we went and we got some that were 50% off, and I think that's probably because about 50% of them were alive. that first batch didn't stick around.
Yeah. You know? Well, what I used to say when I was giving presentations on all types of pest control is that oftentimes, maybe most of the times, that the ladybugs that you buy have been harvested when they are kind of hibernating mm-hmm. in the foothills in you know, either in the Coast Range or, you know, in California or wherever they come from. It's hard to know. But so their natural inclination is to fly to burn excess fat. And so maybe they're just doing what comes natural.
Yeah.
If you keep the doors shut, does that help?
Unfortunately, there's lots of places where they can get out.
Oh,
cracks. Like, it's not a
tight. Yeah, you probably have vents space in the top.
Yes, there. Absolutely. Right. It's too hot otherwise.
Right. Well, you got contributed to the neighborhood supply.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, as far as another pest goes, maybe we'll just go back and forth here. The I got an email just before I left here, so I didn't have a lot of time to research it, but somebody wrote in. Can't remember his name now. I think he was from Cornelius, though. And he asked if we had a solution for squash bugs. And I've never dealt with squash bugs that I know of. Never had the problem. And so I just did a quick search from the OSU Extension, and they're tough to deal with, particularly the adults. The nymphs or the young beetles are more susceptible to spinosad, which is a bacterial thing that you can solution that you can spray that will enter their guts and whatnot. But that's all I got. Jim, do you have anything on squash bugs?
Let's just squash them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's funny, huh?
That's not bad, yeah.
I like that. You could turn a noun into a verb.
Yeah.
Squash bugs.
Yeah. Okay, so
sorry.
You know, we're not the experts on that.
No.
What other pests are you dealing with out there besides the birds?
Yeah, birds. We don't have squirrels, thankfully, and we don't have super. We've been keeping on top of the gophers, and you know, not too much. It's been a problem this mm-hmm, year mm-hmm, so far. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say.
Well, what I would suggest that. You know, it's harder and harder with smaller lots to have a complex ecosystem in your yard. And if like it's going up across the street from me, where there was one house and, you know, lots of garden space, there was lawn, but there were big trees and other things, you know, a fairly good habitat. You know, now there are six houses, you know, right next, row houses, if you will. And it'd be very little, but the developer has been in contact with me and for my suggestions for pollinator plants. They didn't ask my position on should they provide on-site parking, but which they didn't. Uh-huh. But they named it this development, you know, pollinator park or pollinator, I can't remember. Pollinator's in the word in the name of it anyway. But the more complex your ecosystem can be, the more nature will take care of your pests. And we're not ever after 100% pest-free garden. It's just don't beat yourself up.
It is really interesting. So in our area, I mean, you know, our farm is pretty diverse, and we don't use harsh chemicals, and we don't use pre-emergent herbicides. And not far from us is a field that has been turned into a huge onion field. Like it must be 100 acres. I can't. It's huge.
Is it for seed or for onions?
It's for onions.
Okay.
And it's just like bare earth. Uh-huh, I mean, what they used on that soil, I have no idea. But my God, it's like, you know, there's nothing there except for the little onion.
Yeah.
And this has been for months. So whatever weed might have been there, it's definitely messed up.
another adage that's seared into my brain is that when you eliminate a pest's natural enemy, then you inherit its work.
Yep.
So, you know, the onion is completely dependent on the farmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that case, presumably.
Yeah. We like natural. We like farming with all the stuff. I mean, we got to control some things for sure.
Right.
Like, you know, there's bindweed, you know, there's some nasty weeds out there too, but generally speaking, we can do it all with the, you know, without killing.
Mechanical.
Yeah.
Well, let's then now revisit that adage about the more legs a creature has, the less likely it is to be a pest. So I used to, you know, I'd have a series of photographs, you know, and the first one was, you know, what's the number one pest in at least Portland gardens, at least my garden? Slugs. They don't have any legs. Okay. So yeah, we're good so far.
Yeah.
And then, well, there aren't hardly any one-legged. Although, I tell you, when I was in high school, I used to play basketball with the center on our team. He was 6'7" or something like that. But he had just one leg, and he had a wooden leg.
Wow.
He was, you know, he was a starter, good, excellent player.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, he hasn't been a pest in my garden. So, two legs. Yeah. People. You know, they're pests. They would come in and pilfer and whatnot. All right, three legs, not so much. You know, four legs. Yeah, deer. Gophers, moles.
Dogs, even.
Yeah. Okay, so then we get up to six legs. Aphids. Yeah, they have six legs.
I never counted.
Insects. They're an insect, so they have six legs.
Is that right?
Yep. But then, you know, it's kind of breaking down here because now we have honeybees and all bees, you know, also have six legs. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of breaking down there. And then we got eight legs. Spiders. Mm-hmm. Good. Very good for our gardens. And clocking in at 10 legs are lobsters. Have you ever had a problem with lobsters in your garden?
I wondered what that was out there the other night.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Get away from this nonsense. Okay, who was it? Bart? Okay, you're on the air.
I didn't hear everything you said because I'm working and I have to get in and out of my vehicle. But you talked about aphids and the ones, not aphids, but the ladybugs, the anti-aphids.
Yeah.
And that the ones that I have dealt with, they always say refrigerate them overnight and then let them go, and then they will be too cold to fly for most of the day, so it makes them acclimatize.
Did you do that, Jim?
Well, we refrigerate them to sort of keep them from, you know, I mean, we didn't do it for that purpose, but that's an interesting thought. We keep them refrigerated so they don't burn up their energy and die, you know.
It's an important point.
Well, that's my two cents, and I always appreciate your show and your humor. Sometimes it's a little bit desired, but I'll take it.
All right.
Thank you.
Now, let me clarify here on aphids, in that aphids are kind of unusual in that the adult form of the aphid actually eats insects. Most of the benefit of beneficial insects, the adult doesn't eat any aphids, any pests. It's their larvae that eat them. Mm-hmm. But the ladybug larvae also eat them, but a lot more than the adults do.
Yeah.
And most of the other predators, it's the larva.
Mm-hmm. I think they call it aphid lion, is what I've heard that larva referred to, L-I-O-N.
Yes, of the lacewing.
Well, really, not the aphid?
Correct. Because they eat a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole other category of beneficial insects, the parasitic wasps, who don't eat at all. What they do is they lay their eggs inside an aphid, for example, and then the egg hatches into a little larva, and it feeds on the inside of the aphid. And when you see the evidence is that they kind of plump up, and if it's a green aphid, they turn kind of tan. If it's a rose aphid, they turn tan. If it's a black aphid, they turn tan when they've been parasitized. Plus, there's a little hole there where the larva or the adult parasitic wasp emerged. And you can see these. I mean, you might need a magnifying glass if you're over 40. But
I'm glad I'm not an aphid.
Yeah, it's kind of what's
like
that
fun
movie? The Alien or Aliens. Mm. Yeah. More. Yep, we got another phone call. Who? Tangent. We got you?
Okay, well, let's go from A to S to Z. We'll start with aphids. And go to slugs, and then zippering.
Oh, all right.
All right, that was interesting. Okay, so aphids, I've been told, and I've used this for years now, you don't have to spray your roses or, like, say your Alberta spruce when you water them. You should spray them with a high pressure. Mm-hmm. The water pressure itself would just blast these things out of there.
And cold water. I mean, the cold helps,
okay,
too.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm using my hose, so.
Yeah.
But so I've not had to use any sprays on those two bushes. Now for slugs and strawberries.
Oh yeah.
I put quarter minus gravel underneath my strawberries. Slugs hate it. It's like walking on eggshells. I don't know if you were barefoot or not.
no way.
Or on glass, maybe for them. They don't. I get actual ripe. No loss on my strawberries now.
Huh?
Quarter minus. Yeah. It's like almost
quarter minus gravel. It's just regular gravel, crushed down to quarter inch or smaller, and there's a lot of dust. It's a lot of it's eighths, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But it works. Yeah, they can't, or they just hate, you know, climbing on it or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that about
a mountain, you know, rocky ledge or something, you know, slipping all the time or what have you. So, and then on zippering, my dad worked for the Department of Transportation, and he mentioned this to me years ago, and probably when I first started driving or something. But he said that whenever you're merging or in the situation you mentioned, but you also mentioned like as an on and on ramp, if people will stop trying to jam in and will just simply every other car, and it was like moves twice as fast. You mentioned 40%. I think you said, you know, twice as fast. But there doesn't need to be these stoppages.
The thing that I still don't understand is that when this every other car is going to take place, because seems like it's at, if it's at the very last moment, then you have to slow down to a crawl so you're safe. But if you do it a mile ahead of time,
some will try to take advantage of that emptiness that's created, right, and rush ahead, and then. But as your other partner mentioned, you're at that stoplight in Oregon City. In other words, there's still a right lane, but it's going to merge quickly after the light, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yes, people do not always take off, and it's certainly not like a train. There's lots of space.
Yeah.
And gently, there's no having to, like, grab or, you know, force your way in. There's just lots of space.
Yeah.
How to merge.
Well, this is interesting that this reminds me of something that I was talking with my dad, 50 years ago, we were stopping there, and, you know, it takes a while after a stoplight, you know, turns green. Mm-hmm. That I said, you know, theoretically, you know, we could all move at the exact same time when that light goes. And he said, yeah, that's right. I mean, my dad didn't have anything to do with this. I think of that every time, though. And, you know, there's this lag because I think people aren't paying attention. But
that's how they drive in Paris. No, when the light turns green, everybody moves. I'm serious. There's less than 5 or 10 feet between cars.
Well,
it's really like almost like a train, but they're practiced. It's the other funny thing about driving in Oregon is that whenever it rains, people slow down, and I find that extremely odd since we get so much rain. But all right.
Okay. Well, thanks for helping me understand certain things.
I know it's off subject, but I could fix the transportation problem at Ross Island Bridge when people are trying to get from the west side to the east side, and there's this huge backup.
Yeah.
Yes, there needs to be a dedicated lane for that Barber Boulevard exit to get on.
Yep.
Nobody
yep.
coming under that bridge.
Just put a okay. little curb there. That's all you need. For.
Thank you.
All right, okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
See, Jim, we have smart listeners.
I know.
Okay. All right, we better take a little break, and then we'll come back with... first of all, I'll talk about stippling while Ty gets our tune up here. But stippling has everything to do with what we're talking about here, particularly aphids, and maybe more importantly, spider mites. And when the spider mites, particularly when they stick their little straws into the leaf, they're sucking out the chlorophyll there too, and so you end up with these kind of white or yellow spots where there's no chlorophyll The leaf has been stippled. So when they feed, that's stippling.
Is a verb?
Stippling is. Really? Well, I don't know that it's... I don't know what the verb form would be.
To stipple?
You don't really have verbs that end in ing, do you?
Well, I thought stippling might be like the small creature that some But I don't know. I don't know the word.
No, it's not a. It's the result.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Okay.
But it might be the act too. But I don't know what form.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm trying to understand.
Okay. Good. Okay.
Okay. Our second tune, and probably going to be the last one, unless we go out on our. And this is. Let's see. Oh yes, this is from the first Little River Band. Oh, that's not the first one, Sleeper Catcher. But anyway, this is Light of Day. We won't listen to much of it. It starts out kind of slow, but Light of Day. Well, I kind of hate to interrupt that. That song goes on for about 8 minutes or so. It's a nice jam there towards the end. Got a groove. Little River Band. Well, let's talk about, to finish up our time here, the pollinating of pineapple guava, and then just whatever update you have on your new project.
Sure. So the pineapple guava, which another name for it is feijoa, a name I'd actually prefer to use because it's a little shorter someday. And then also pineapple guava gets people slightly confused because they'll say, oh, I love guavas or I love pineapples.
Yeah.
But pineapple guava is neither a pineapple nor a guava.
Discuss.
and I was thinking before the show, I thought, wouldn't it be fun? I mean, I'd love to hear from listeners some way we could poll our listeners and find out how many of them have this beautiful plant in their garden, because I think it's like a very, very special plant. It's hardy to at least 5 degrees. It's native to Brazil. New Zealand, like they did with kiwi, they were the ones who took that plant and really made the best varieties. But unfortunately, it's not well known around the world. And it's a beautiful evergreen shrub with striking flowers, easy to grow. The fruit of these newer varieties is outstanding to me. And again, I'd love to hear of any listeners who have them and like them. Maybe the next show, somebody could call in and tell us about their experience. But right now, they're just about starting to bloom. They're pretty late. They're late to start growing, which is kind of good because they don't get hurt by frost or anything. And right now, the flowers may have already opened in some people's warmer locations. They're just starting at our place out in the liberal nook. But in their native range and also in New Zealand, they are pollinated by birds. That eat the sweet petals, because they also have sweet flower petals that are quite nice. And birds eat the petals, and in that process, they move pollen around. And they're not typically pollinated by insect, a little bit, thankfully. But what we do at the nursery is we cross-pollinate them by hand because we want to get a lot of fruit. And so it's a good idea. There are ones that are considered self-fertile. But I would say, in general, that if you have room, plant two different varieties. Mm. And then you can take a flower from one and go over to the other one. And it's good to do it when they're shortly after they've opened. Don't wait till they're almost finished, because the pollen won't be so viable then.
I mean, you have a day or two?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then take that flower and go over to the neighboring bush and dust it on that, on the some of the flowers mm-hmm. on that one. And then vice versa, go back the other way, and you'll get fruit. They ripen fairly late, but like I said, they're pretty hard to beat, in my opinion, and for fruit.
Yeah,
quality.
You've brought some in here, and they're tasty.
Really, really good. I'm making me hungry to think about it.
Okay, well, you've got about less than a minute to give us the update on your new project.
Okay, so we're working on a classroom version film, An Oregon Story, Saving Our Beaches, Farmland, and More. And this is pretty exciting, this classroom one, because we really want to have Oregon, young people in Oregon, learn about how their state became such a wonderful place, and we want to keep it that way.
Right.
So it's really, really important to do that. And you can go to our website, An Oregon Story, all put together, .com. You can watch now a 25-minute version of the film if you don't want to watch the full 83-minute one. And you can make a donation to our classroom version project, which would be awesome. We'd love to stay in touch with folks. We'd love to have help in various ways. We're actually going to have a booth scheduled for 4 county fairs. Which is so exciting. And 3 of them are in one weekend after the next. So we're going to start at the Marion County Fair in mid-July, then the Linn County Fair, the Hood River County Fair, and then a couple of weeks later, the Polk County Fair. We just learned about that one last night.
So all right.
That's pretty exciting. And we're going to be talking about the film and about all the work we're doing to keep Oregon, Oregon. There you go.
Well done, Jim.
Thank you.
And Joe. I'm assuming Joe's involved with this
Joe's
project.
Joe's not only involved, but essential part of the whole process.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time. Thanks for all the calls. We'll go out maybe with our last light theme here from Little Walter. Boom, boom, out go the light. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back in 28 days.
Wow. Okay. See you, Glenn. Thank you.